Big show for you all today. It's the Week 10 preview. How are we at Week 10 already? What a time to be alive. Andy Behrens joins in the first half of the show to break down a couple of backfields and burning questions. 49ers backfield, what's that going to look like with Christian McCaffrey coming back? And is this the week that Tyron Tracy really, truly, finally goes to the moon? Later, Tara Roberts joins to discuss her make or break players for Week 10. We talk a little Brian Thomas Jr. potentially playing without Trevor Lawrence and what that might mean for your fantasy flex spot. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Friday, November 8th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball. We've already warmed up talking a little ball in the pre-show chat here. And joining me to continue that conversation on the actual podcast is the man himself, my good friend, Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
Yeah, sorry to anybody out there who thought they were going to get a Bears rant on this show because we took care of it pre-show. It's all out of the way. Got the Bears flushed from the system. Don't have to think about it. I know I've said it many times, but this is my favorite show that I do during the week because number one, there's no accountability, and number two, I don't have to know anything. I can just throw a bunch of questions out there. We're just discussing things. We're just getting it sort of sussed out. I don't have to make any firm declarations. Nobody's holding me to account. I love this show.
All right, well, listen, I'm happy you're happy. We had the Bears off the record Bears chat, so you don't have to get that on any of that on the record, which is probably for the best for both of us, honestly.
Premium subscribers only.
Yeah. That's the $69.99 year package that you get with Yahoo Premium for sure. You get the Bears pre-show chat, and yeah, now you don't have to be held accountable here. So everything is coming up, Behrens. Andy mentioned, what we do here on the preview show every week, Andy provides three burning fantasy questions that he wants answered, and then we preview three matchups that he says deserve your attention. Then in the back half of the show, Tara Roberts will join me to identify the make or break players for Week 10 that could determine the outcome of your fantasy matchups. And we wrap the show with our keys to winning players each week. We actually do have a listener question here, a listener burning question to stick on the end of Andy's three questions. As I mentioned, every week, if we get one good question to fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com, we will stick it as the fourth question in Andy's three burning fantasy questions segment. But let's get into that segment right now. The three burning fantasy questions that Andy wants answered this week here in week number 10 of the NFL season. Andy, hit me with the first one.
The first one is fairly obvious, and I think it's the biggest one of the week, and that is the 49ers backfield, right? Who is available to us? How much will they play? And in what order will we see them play? This feels like it kind of hangs over the week, at least for a lot of us, right? We got McCaffrey back at practice, apparently feeling no worse for wear after his first couple of sessions. That's good. We also have Jordan Mason back at practice. Isaac Garendo never left practice, and we absolutely cannot trust the head coach on any matter related to his personnel decisions, right? Like, he's been lying to us all year. I don't need to walk people through it necessarily, but you will remember that we started the season with, it seems like McCaffrey's probably going to be good to go in week one. And then a few days later, he was on IR. And a few days after that, he was on a flight to Germany, right? Like, so we've been lied to. And we'll see where we're at this week. But they can't lie to us when they actually make in-game decisions. My assumption is that over a period of some weeks, I don't know how long, I don't know if this takes 2 weeks, 3 weeks, four, the Niners are going to ramp up McCaffrey to something like 16 touches a game, 15, 16, 18 touches with an eye toward, regular usage, 20 touches, 20 plus touches by sort of mid-December, end of December, right? Mason, I think, has played well enough that 8 to 10 carries a game for him they can get CMC-like production out of him, at least on the ground, while the actual Christian McCaffrey is saved from some needless wear and tear. It's not like the Niners were conservative with McCaffrey last year, right? Plus, this team is also like, you have to think about the team context here. The Niners are 4-4. Like, I might have thought that, you know, coming into the season, that their whole goal would just be, hey, let's get McCaffrey to the postseason healthy. But they gotta make it there. And I did not expect them to be a 4-win team at this point, right? So maybe they don't have the luxury of long-term planning. But again, like, a few nuggets on Mason, because I feel like Garendo was such a popular ad. People, there's a segment in the fantasy analyst community that is already ready for us to like ditch Jordan Mason for the rookie. And I feel like we should remind people that Mason has averaged 5.1 yards per carry. He's getting almost 3.5 yards after contact. He is sixth in the NFL right now in missed tackles. He's fifth in runs of 10 or more yards. Stylistically, he's very different from McCaffrey. Like, there's, he should play. Like, if anybody's going to play in combination with Christian McCaffrey, it probably should be Jordan Mason, assuming good health. So anyway, it's a big open question. And I think it's maybe worth talking about. Like, I don't know, last year, I really thought that the Niners would come into the season and they wouldn't just lean on McCaffrey necessarily for 20, 25 touches per game, because we're going to burn him out before we get to, you know, the most important weeks. And they didn't take that approach at all. I certainly think it would be the right approach coming off maybe multiple leg injuries. So we'll see what they do. One thing we know for sure is that the coach isn't going to tell us anything in advance.
Yeah, we're not going to know anything in advance. This is great for the burning questions, Andy, because the answer is just the great shrug emoji. shout out to Marcus Grant, who, when I was back working with him at the NFL, once, I mean, maybe the bosses weren't really totally dialed into our, you know, fantasy content, but did at one point in like a weekly preview piece, you're breaking down every player from every game, when Jimmy Graham was just like an absolutely unpredictable fantasy player with the Seattle Seahawks, once just wrote for his blurb like a shrug emoji and no one said anything about it. NFL.com published article, fantasy analysis on Jimmy Graham, shrug. And I kind of feel like the Marcus Grant shrug emoji is very applicable to this 49ers backfield situation this week. Because, as you mentioned, we're not going to get any clues from the coaching staff. And yeah, I find it interesting that you say there's like a segment of fantasy people that want to see Jordan Mason, you know, pushed up out of here. Because when I've seen, and like, Garendo is definitely flashed, but I think he's more of a, and maybe this answers my question, because it's flashy, it's big plays, but he, I think, is more of a boom bust runner right now. And when I've watched Jordan Mason this year, even from, you know, the first couple of games he was out there, I thought, man, that's a power back that, and admittedly, I've always been a fan of Jordan Mason, and like may have had him stashed on a few dynasty teams, so maybe I'm a compromised source, but I thought he's like the type of tempo runner, like power back, that would really complement a McCaffrey and take some of those grinder carries off of McCaffrey's plate, so that we can use him in all these fun and efficient ways that the 49ers do. So I would think an ideal scenario, you're right to point out that the 49ers not being a dominant team right now with a dominant record and just like cruising to the number one seed in the NFC kind of complicates this. Their division is definitely clogged up there. They need to win games and put some gap between them and the rest of the guys in the NFCs. But I would think that an ideal scenario would be kind of a 60-40 split in favor of Jordan Mason until McCaffrey gets healthy and maybe later in the season they fully unleash him. I don't know. I definitely think that we could still see some Jordan Mason here. Bottom line too, Andy, is that from a fantasy perspective, I kind of want to start both of these guys and figure it out, because this Buccaneers defense is 29th in defensive success rate. They're 27th in EPA per play allowed. And definitely a lot of that is because the pass defense is just atrocious. However, the run defense is a bottom half of the league unit now too, because the whole thing is starting to crumble here.
Yeah, it's funny. People who don't work in the fantasy industry have no way of knowing this, but like we use this rankings tool that's available on Fantasy Pros, right? And I put in my running back ranks this week, and one thing that the tool does, for reasons unknown, is it will occasionally flag players and be like, "Are you sure you want to do this?" And it's been doing that to me on Jordan Mason all week. It's been like, you know, the industry consensus on Jordan Mason is like RB 48 or whatever. You've got him at RB. Are you sure you want to do this? And I'm like, yeah. I feel like I want to do this. I think you can play him. Like,
I'm Andy Behrens. Okay, don't tell me what the industry consensus is. I'm the industry. I am Andy Behrens.
Every time I publish these ranks, it's like, oh, here we found an error. Surely you didn't mean to do this. And I'm like, no, I guess I kind of did. Sorry. Like, I think Jordan Mason's playable. I think Jordan Mason's been awesome. I think he's been one of the best. I mean, it's the Niners, and it's a great system, and he just seems lab built for some of the carries that he's getting, and I can't see any reason why he wouldn't continue to see 10 or 12 touches, especially given the fragile health situation that obviously exists with Christian McCaffrey. I'm on board with your scenario where they ease McCaffrey back in. I don't know if it's going to happen. I think if I'd actually waited half a season for him, I would just go ahead and play him in his first game back. Mm-hmm. He's too important, and he's too good. Like, what McCaffrey could actually do on 10 carries is just too great. Like, I couldn't sit that, but I think they're both playable. And I certainly think that Mason is more playable than most seem to give him credit for.
Yeah. This is a pretty critical, just overall big reveal game coming out of their bye, because we also have questions about what the receiver rotation is going to look like. And again, this is a matchup you'd probably want to start some of those wideouts. Let's move to your second pressing question, which has to do with another running back that, you know, I saw Sigmund Bloom point this out. Like, he's like, would you guys, you know, lose like all credit? Do I lose all credibility if I have I don't remember the exact number, but, you know, like 20 running back ones ranked this week, because there are so many running backs in so many good spots, which maybe that answers our question about Jordan Mason pessimism this week. But you've got a question here about Tyrann Tracy heading into week 10.
I first of all, I totally agree with Sig on that. Like, it feels like there's 15 or 20 guys who you can make a, you know, pound the table. This is a top five fantasy back. This guy could finish RB1 overall this week. There's just a lot of good players in good spots. Mine is the guy I wanted to flag was Tyrann Tracy. And it's really simply like, what is the ceiling for him in an absolute premium matchup? Because I feel like Sal and I have actually kind of been competing for like who gets to talk about him the most this week. Sal beat me to the Fantasy Football Live document on Tyrann Tracy. Like, I rarely lose a race to the planning document, but I did this week with Sal. I wrote about him in the newsletter as a potential buy low ahead of this game because the schedule ahead is so friendly. We don't have to spend a lot of time on Tracy because I know that you've already talked about him with Sal this week. He's in one of those weeks in which I feel like, you know, a player can sort of unlock a new tier for themselves in terms of the way we think about them moving forward. Matchups just don't get any better than Carolina. They give up the most fantasy points to opposing running backs. Also, I believe the most fantasy points to opposing tight ends, like maybe the fifth most to opposing quarterbacks. It's just a very user-friendly defense. And I think, you know, again, as we look at the schedule ahead for Tracy, it's not just this game. It's Tampa Bay, it's Dallas, it's the Saints. I mean, it's just a layup line for like a month and a half. He has been seeing 65% of the snaps over the last 3 weeks with Devin Singletary back in the mix. So he's the clear lead back for the Giants right now, for whatever that's worth. I also think that Giants-Panthers game, which again, it's the early Sunday game in Munich, super interesting because we also get the Jonathan Brooks debut, perhaps. Both teams have some sort of fringy, fun players. Malik Nabers could blow up. You know, it feels like there's probably a right answer on the Giants side this week, and I'm just hoping it's Tracy.
Yeah, this is my frustration with the Giants right now and just the overall vibe, effectiveness of the offense, especially with Andrew Thomas not in the mix here, is that there are so many players that we care about on this team, mostly Malik Nabers and Tyrann Tracy. So I agree with you. I think Tracy is set up for an absolute smash spot. I did appreciate one, you know, probably troll comment from somebody on Twitter when Sal put out the video of us from the podcast talking about Tyrann Tracy, and some, you know, talking to like, oh, this, you should try to buy low on him, this will be the last chance to buy low on him, and some again, probably some trolls like, is the buy low window in the room with us right now, sort of inferring that it might already be a little too late, but certainly this could be the inflection point here for any sort of like what we think of Tyrann Tracy now might be very different than what we think of him going forward. So I guess, like, let's just say hypothetically, Andy, he comes out and he smashes in this matchup, which he should. I think this could be one of those like beautifully bad shootout type of games where a lot of interesting young players are scoring fantasy points for us, and we're going to make a lot of grand conclusions about these two offenses that maybe we shouldn't, because there are serious holes in both defenses. But let's just say hypothetically Tyron Chase comes. That's also, by the way, this game could also be 10-7 or something like that. Let's be super clear about the product you might get in this game. But let's live in the positive world right now. Tyron Chase comes out, smashes his matchup, whatever. How high are you viewing him? You know, like how high can he fly rest of season, I guess?
Well, see, that's just the thing. They do have the bye coming up after the Carolina game. But then after that, it's three of the friendliest spots that we can possibly find for a running back. It's Tampa, it's Dallas, it's New Orleans. Who knows, like, just how bad things are going to sink for New Orleans in a month, like, and for Dallas as well. And those have already been super generous defenses. So this is just, like, that's the kind of schedule that allows a single player to sort of lift you into the playoffs, right? Like, we, you know, again, we throw around the term league winner way too much, but that's the kind of, like, you know, this is like 5-6 weeks of just absolute gift after gift after gift. And again, Tracy has already elevated himself to the lead role in that backfield, so we don't have to answer those questions. It's just a perfect schedule. It's hard to design a better schedule for a running back. It gets a little rougher at the end of the season, but man, this next month ahead, like, if we really hit on him and he stays healthy through that schedule, really difficult to imagine how he doesn't score as a top five fantasy running back over the next month. And that's what we should be looking for. And the reason he is still a buy low is that I get it, like in really sharp leagues and among players who are listening to multiple fantasy podcasts every week, okay, like, you already know what's going on with the Giants backfield and with Tracy. But also, there's this greater universe of fantasy leagues out there, and they do read some of the content. And like, Tracy's still he's unrostered in 25% of Yahoo fantasy leagues, and like, he hasn't actually had the monster game yet. I know he had the pretty big game against Pittsburgh, but it wasn't like 180 yards and two touchdowns, and that's the kind of setup that we're talking about against the Panthers, right? Like, I feel legitimately there's a series of games upcoming for him in which he can just absolutely detonate in a way that, like, if you had that guy on your roster, you're absolutely winning the week. So that hasn't occurred yet. And it usually takes one or two of those games before the masses really, really jump on a player. Like, again, this guy is still unattached in a bunch of leagues, like tens of thousands of leagues. So we're not all there yet. I do think that there is still a buy low window,
especially when one of those big eruption games comes in a solo spot here, an island game, like we get in this Germany one here in week 10. All right, let's go to your third question here, which is about a certain wideout who was drafted quite high in leagues this year.
Yeah, this is really just for my own purposes, and I know it's helpful that other people are also attached to this player, but this is just
other
for
people,
my own sake.
Just a few.
I need it to finally be Tyreek Hill week at some point. It's got to happen at some point. Matt, he has only 100-yard receiving game on the season, and it was forever ago. It was in opening week, literally forever ago. That's like a different time. I was a different person back then. This is the man who led the NFL in receiving yardage and receiving touchdowns last season. He was on a 2,000-yard pace deep into the year before that late ankle injury. And I know he's dealing with a foot injury of some sort of unknown severity right now, but he did play all but one snap last week. Only saw 5 targets. Achan and Jonnu Smith combined for like half the team's targets in week 9. And we're getting a Monday night stage this week. Really fun game. We're getting a Rams defense that has given up 3 different individual weeks this season in which an opposing wide receiver produced at least 130 receiving yards and multiple touchdowns. Marvin Harrison Jr. did it. Juwan Jennings did it. JSN just did it against the Rams. Needed overtime to do it, but he did it. I absolutely know that last year's healthy version of Tyreek Hill would have gone for like 220 and 2 scores in this game. There's no question about it. I'm just hoping Tyreek can give us like 5 for 80, because that's been the ceiling lately. And I realize some of that is related to Tyler Huntley, but it hasn't really gotten better. since Tua came back. But I am still hopeful that there is an eruption game out there somewhere.
Yeah. And all three of those wideouts that you mentioned, take resumes and, you know, preconceived notions about who the players are or whatever. Marvin Harrison Jr., Juwan Jennings, and Jaxon Smith-Njigba. It's not as if any of those guys were coming in tearing it up, right? Marvin Harrison Jr. Week two was coming up. Oh my God, he one pass for 4 yards was the production.
Remember it was is he too slow? Is he too slow to play receiver? He's only, you know, a 17-mile-an-hour receiver. He can't play, can he?
Right.
That's where we were at.
Yeah, and obviously the rest of the season's been a little up and down for Marvin Harrison, but that's still the high watermark is against that Rams defense. Mm-hmm. Juwan Jennings is a guy that I've always had like a weird affinity for Juwan Jennings, but having weird affinities.
Run blocker.
Yeah, run blocker. No block, no rock, baby. weird affinity for certain wide receivers is kind of the whole bit. That's kind of the whole thing. But this isn't a guy that was, okay, I'm normally scoring 3 touchdowns and going over 40 fantasy points. That's what he does against the damn Rams. And even JSN, I mean, fantasy analysts were getting their jokes off like after about one quarter of that game, calling him, names and stuff like that. So, this was not a guy that was coming in here tearing it up either. He tears it up against the Rams. This should be the smash spot. And it's been funny because the production has gotten better with Tua back there. We're back to double digit fantasy points, but just barely. We're like just over 10 fantasy points for Tyreek Hill the last couple of games. So I don't know. And you know, even we're not even going to have a conversation about like Jaylen Waddle, but obviously he's an embattled player at this point. Really the one thing working in this offense right now is dumping it down and kind of designed stuff to Devon Achane. So, and this Rams defense, I will just note, I think the secondary is still problematic. So yeah, obviously for these receivers, good stuff, but the play up front has certainly improved. Jared Verse has played really well. Byron Young's playing well. Braden Fisk dominated that game against the Seattle Seahawks in week 9. So can this offensive line in Miami protect Tua long enough for him to get the ball downfield? That is still an outstanding question as well.
Yeah, the Achane thing, which is fun in its own right.
Totally.
Like he's become obviously a must-start guy. You're certainly playing him this week, and it's reasonable to think that he has taken a chunk of the production simply away from Waddle and Hill. He's great, but man, that like given the number of playmakers here and the creativity that I thought was present in the design of the offense, you would expect at least two guys to be able to go off each week. And certainly in a matchup like that, I mean, man, the other thing is you took Tyreek Hill like second, third overall, certainly with the expectation that a normal week from him is going to be 90, 100 yards, good shot at a touchdown. And there's literally only been one of those weeks. There's only been one week at the level that you considered the floor and you haven't seen a ceiling week yet. Right. Like, and I'm hopeful that it can happen in the second half of the season. I gotta believe that the Dolphins can produce like 2 great fantasy starts in any given week, but we just haven't seen it yet.
All right, let's hit this listener question before we move to the break. Real quick, Andy, this one comes in from at S Deuce. I don't know. ATSDUCE was the email, or it didn't sign the name anything. At least I don't think. If I'm messing that up, dear friend, my apologies, but sent in this question: how much should the position matchups, obviously fantasy points against, whatever, just basically end of season matchups for a player be factored in when evaluating trades? Obviously, this is a discussion we have a lot preseason. Don't be thinking too far ahead, but now we're here in week 10. We're getting close to like fantasy trade deadlines, Andy. How much do you factor, the kind of the matchups to come when you're trying to make these trades here towards the end of the season?
I'm willing to go about as far as I did with Tyrone Tracy, which is to say I'll look a month ahead. I'm not ready to skip ahead to what it looks like in weeks 16 and 17. It's pretty far away. And most NFL defenses are like they're like 2 injuries away from utterly collapsing.
Good
right?
point.
From going from whoever you consider the best defense in the league right now. Like the Steelers have been great at basically stopping everything, but it's not that difficult to identify the one player who can't get hurt for the Steelers. And then all of a sudden it's, the house of cards falls in on itself. Like most defenses are like that. So I don't, it's fine if you want to use it like playoff strength of schedule, if you want to use that as some sort of tiebreaker, but I'm not ready to like lock in on it yet ahead of any sort of trade discussions, but I am very willing to look at the 3 weeks ahead of us and just say, what does this look like? And ding a player who hasn't yet had his bye, or ding a player who's got tough matchups in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And I'm all about like what is right in front of me in fantasy. So in Tracy's case, again, it's just nothing but extremely friendly matchups once he comes out of his bye, and again in the matchup ahead against Carolina. So that's what I want. I kind of lock in on the 4 weeks ahead.
That's really good analysis and very sobering, because I do tend to sit here on the show, especially when I pull up the schedule and you start avalanching it, which is just, and then they get this in week 12, and then this in week 13, and this in week 14, and this week 15, 16, 17. Like, oh man, what a schedule, because you just start reading it off. But great reminder of something that you just said in the Tyreek Hill section. Week one feels like an awful long time ago. We are now here at the halfway point. Basically, we've got 7-8 more weeks to go here, and what's the reality in week 17 is going to feel really different than the reality here in week 10, because shoot, like you said, I feel like a very different person spiritually, mentally, emotionally, physically than I did in week one. So it's a good reminder there to not look too far ahead.
It's a great question, though.
It is a great question, and you know, I think everybody approaches it differently. You know, so that's another thing. If I had somebody different in the chair here asking this question to, maybe it's not Andy, they might have a different answer. So I do like Andy's approach about this. And again, it's typical Barons, very sobering, keeping us in the moment here, Andy Barons. All right, with that, let's take a break, and we come back, we'll talk through the three matchups that Andy says deserve your attention right after this. All right, we're back. Got three great games to discuss here. Well,
one of them is questionable. I concede. Yeah.
One of them is a little questionable and became more questionable as we started taping. You know, actually, let's get that one out of the way. Let's go out of order here. Let's talk Vikings at Jaguars. And I mentioned this because as we were recording, Ian Rappaport from the NFL Network tweeted out, as Jaguars quarterback Trevor Lawrence, who's dealing with a left shoulder injury, continues to get treatment and weigh options for the future, sources say he's considered unlikely to play Sunday versus the Vikings. Lawrence was limited in practice yesterday, and Coach Doug Peterson was noncommittal about his status. I feel pretty – I already didn't feel great about the Jaguars overall. I feel even less great about the Jaguars. Is C.J. Beathard, your boy, still the backup quarterback there? I take it back. Mac Jones.
Yeah, but they just claimed Beathard off of Miami's practice squad, which was, you know, and that was like the signal flare that went up on Tuesday, basically, or on Wednesday, and told us, oh, maybe there's something more to this Lawrence thing than just, you know, than just like a limited practice and a mild concern like that. Going out and actually adding somebody who's been in your building before and you know, familiar with the offense was pretty meaningful. And, you know, perhaps I would have pivoted away from this game in the three games that I was most interested in before the Lawrence news, because it gets pretty messy if we're stepping. And I know that nobody has like, you know, incredibly high opinion of Trevor Lawrence at this point, despite what it looks like when everything goes right. But yeah, I do okay. think we'll there is a that. Pretty clear step down to Mac Jones. I'm not eager to see what the Jags look like with Mac Jones. This was just, this is one of those matchups where like, you start looking at how friendly each defense is really for fantasy purposes, right? Like Jacksonville gives up second most fantasy points to quarterbacks, the fifth most to running backs, the fourth most to wide receivers, the eighth most to tight ends. So on the Viking side, this was always super simple. This was always just start your dudes. But Minnesota's defense has been, you know, they're fun and they're pretty frisky and they're full of sacks and they lead the NFL in interceptions and they do a lot of things well, but they are also bottom five in terms of passing yards allowed. So they have been, you know, little bend don't break and then they turn you over. You know, it's a little bit of that. That game had the potential pre-Lawrence news to give us something a little bit like that Green Bay Jacksonville score, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's, you know, we're getting well over 50 points and it's a game that you didn't necessarily flag as one that was going to be incredibly fantasy friendly. And then it ends up, oh, you know, at the end of the day, they've scored 55 or 57 points. Felt like a great spot for the first, and this may yet happen. At some point, we have to get a double-digit target game for Brian Thomas. Hasn't happened yet. Certainly seems like he deserves it. He's yeah. bumped up against it. He's, you know, he's had 9 target games, but just relative to the other guys in that receiving room, some of whom are banged up right now. Gabe Davis banged up right now. Like, it just seems like we could build the whole thing out of Brian Thomas. It just hasn't quite happened yet.
Yeah, and I'm a little less interested in them building the whole thing out of Brian Thomas if, you know, Mac Jones is the starter. By the yeah. way, you know, side note, how was CJ Beathard on the Dolphins practice squad? Your guy, and he didn't get any burn? I mean,
he didn't play over Tyler Huntley? I know. They're the same as rushers, so that's a wash. Sure. Beathard, obviously, an Iowa legend, a Niners legend. I have no idea. I really can't explain it.
Yeah, pretty questionable. Anyways. Nobody cares about CJ Beathard, but yeah, I mean, I don't, sorry, Andy, nobody else, sorry, nobody else.
Nobody else cares.
Nobody else cares about CJ Beathard analysis on this particular podcast. I'm sure many, many people care about him as a human being. I do too. But anyways, the hell am I talking about? Yeah, this game definitely becomes a lot less interesting without Trevor Lawrence out there. And I mean, Brian Thomas obviously isn't coming off of a big performance anyways. He was game time decision, so I'm kind of willing to wave it off a little bit, but at the same time, you're right about the role. And I think Brian Thomas is great. Great player, really, like, rocket ship trajectory. But at the same time, you know, he hasn't necessarily had those, like, big target games. And, you know, I think some of it is just a little bit of the volatility still left in his game, which we can be realistic about rookie receivers and say, great player, but at the same time, you know, maybe we're getting a little over our skis with rookies at time. All right, next game up here, Andy, the one you want to actually talk about first, Steelers at Commanders. What do we got on this?
I love this game. Both teams just made notable deadline trades, right? Both teams are behaving like contenders and are contenders. There's a little rougher road for the Steelers, I would say, in the AFC, but still, both teams going for it. I probably would have liked to see Washington add receiving help, but obviously the Lattimore deal was just sort of an all-in move for them, and the receivers who were left at the point that we reached in that musical chairs game maybe weren't difference makers anyway. Pittsburgh's defense, mentioned it already in the show, has been good against everything. Washington really solid against the pass, but vulnerable against the run. So this just on paper looks like a good spot for Najee Harris, for Jaylen Warren. I would also mention, just as a potential fantasy trade nugget in the same spirit of the Tyrone Tracy discussion, Pittsburgh has some friendly spots ahead. They have all of their division games ahead of them, which is a little bit wild, but that means two matchups each with two of the league's friendliest pass defenses in the Ravens and the Browns. And those games are ahead of like week 18. So like we get a Bengals game coming up. Like, it is a really friendly schedule. And not that somebody like George Pickens is a buy low exactly, but I still think even if he's a buy high, it's a good player to target because they have some really friendly spots ahead. But this matchup specifically, I love it. We got stars on each side. It's Pittsburgh coming out of its bye, so we get a chance to see if, you know, do we get another good game from Russell Wilson. That's kind of fun. Daniels has been great. Seems like Brian Robinson's coming back for this one, so it's just kind of, I don't know, fire up everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could probably still trade for a guy like George Pickens, who's only, you know, wide receiver 28 on the season and had 5 yeah. for 74 in the last game. You know, he did have that one deeper shot later. So, and
I feel like he's had a bunch of good games with no touchdowns, right? Yeah. So, like, the point production hasn't necessarily been there.
Correct, yeah. And he has had a couple of plays called back, especially early in the season, yes. too. Obviously, he should have had a much bigger game on Sunday, or was it Monday night against the Giants, if he puts that second foot down.
Yeah.
Come on, George. Let's go. Get that second foot down. I think you're playing for great football this year. I think you got a really good connection with Russell Wilson. But I love those matchups that you mentioned in the future, especially because you just think about the way George Pickens and Russell Wilson have played together, will continue to play together. It's mm-hmm. a lot of deep shots you know, which Baltimore is vulnerable against the deep pass this year. We've seen that, you know, in a ton of samples. And then obviously the Browns too, it's a lot of single high coverage, man coverage on the outside. That's the George Pickens specialty as well. So
yeah,
he's definitely somebody I think is an interesting trade target. And yeah, I mean, I'm really, it's weird. I did not think I'd be interested in Washington's offense this season. Obviously I've already done the, you know, mea culpa on the Cliff stuff. On the last show, talked about the matchup for Terry McLaurin against another single high team here in Pittsburgh with Sal earlier this week. 17 average depth of target against single high. We could see some big plays from him this week. But it's Pittsburgh's offense that I'm kind of sickly fascinated by here too. So I do think George Pickens is in a good spot in this game. Overall, just really buying what the Russell Wilson Pittsburgh Steelers are selling, which is something I didn't think would be coming out of my mouth here in week 10. And overall, yeah, I like where the run game is headed as well with Najee Harris.
Yeah, I feel like if there's, you know, it's kind of a, not a lot of fantasy implications to it, but if there's an area where I feel like I need to give a little bit of a mea culpa, it's just I was done with Russell Wilson.
Yeah,
like I mean, I really thought, even though I thought the what Sean Payton got out of him last year, I thought was like sort of maximizing what was left of Russell Wilson. Right. And it was that if you were just watching those games, they were weird. It was everything at the line of scrimmage, behind the line of scrimmage. I know the production was more or less there, but man, I mean, he has made some like drop it in the bucket, downfield throws. This has been a very different offense for Russell Wilson, and he's running it well. I've been really impressed. And I kind of laughed at the idea of him replacing Justin Fields, in part because Justin Fields was like, you know, some of that was a fantasy argument and Fields was like the QB6, QB7 when it happened. But man, Wilson's looked great. And it is difficult to argue that the ceiling for that passing game isn't higher with Wilson. He's been terrific. I didn't even mention him by name at the top, but like we get our first shot at seeing how they use Mike Williams. I mean, I think we kind of know how they're going to use Mike Williams. There is one highest and best use of Mike Williams, and I think it pairs well with Russ. So it's a little bit of a duplication of what they will ask George Pickens to do, but I don't know. This offense got a little bit more fun. I think we saw something from Austin before the bye as well. So there's some playmakers here outside of Pickens. I'm excited for this game.
Yeah, lean into it, man, because Russ, you know, I was done with Russ when he left Seattle. I was very, very out on the Denver Broncos Russell Wilson experience, and it was even worse than I thought it was going to be. So I've definitely been very low on Russ for the last few years. But I still think he's a limited quarterback at this point because he was a limited quarterback in his athletic prime, and he's definitely going to be limited at this stage of his career. But the Steelers and nobody wants to hear it, but credit to Arthur Smith. They're just leaning into what he does, like what he does really well, which is, you've got one George Pickens. Let's get the older, you know, version of what George Pickens does, which is Mike Williams. So they're leaning into it. I think it's going to be good for all these players involved here. Well, I mean, we'll see. They're coming out of the bye. Obviously, we've only seen two games. You know, it's not as if anybody's really particularly impressed by the Giants secondary. So let's see what they do against Washington and obviously going forward. But overall, I feel really good about this offense and where they're at right now. Let's move to the final game here, Andy, featuring one team that how could you not feel great about the Detroit Lions and going into Houston to play the Texans, which don't feel so great about those Houston Texans at this point. What do you got in this one?
Yeah, we are going to need Nico Collins back to truly elevate this game into what it could be, right? Detroit, obviously, this is the league's top scoring offense. They can clear 30 points against anyone, regardless of the quality of the defense. So it's always just fire up your Lions. But Nico, if he can return, would really put CJ Stroud back in our plans because it has... I mean, no mystery. It has not been great when Stroud is throwing to John Mechie and Hutchinson and Dalton Schultz and Bob Woods, right? Like those are fine complementary players, but that none of them are guys that you can feature necessarily in a passing game, and none of them are even close to Nico Collins as playmakers. Stroud has only cleared 20 fantasy points once this season and hasn't done it since September. But of course, like if we get Collins back and it's just Collins and Tank Dell, like all of a sudden we can think about CJ Stroud as a top 10 fantasy quarterback again. So that's kind of the key to the whole thing. And maybe we know by the time people are listening to this podcast, we probably know it. It feels like the vibes are pretty good generally on Nico Collins. It would just be really, really nice to get him back on the practice field and get him involved in this thing. Because again, if he's in it, I'm definitely starting him. I don't need like a wait and see week on Nico Collins. If the Texans say he can go, he's in my lineup. No question about it. Top five or six fantasy receiver. He's been incredible this year. So that's one big piece. On the Detroit side, I think the only thing, you know, the only thing I'll call out here is just how ludicrously effective, efficient, and good Jahmyr Gibbs has been this season. He leads all rushers right now in yards per carry at 6.4, which is stupid at this point in the season. Also leads all rushers, and oftentimes this will be a quarterback at the top of this leaderboard, leads all rushers in success rate at 63.1. 63.1, that's crazy. And David Montgomery is at like 55.5. So mm-hmm. like that tandem, each of them, I think, was 7 rushing touchdowns. Absolutely ridiculous. Just a filthy running game that you can't stop, and you have to just not even look at matchups with the Lions. Honestly, also, I guess we get Jameson Williams back, yeah. So who knows what that's going to look like, right? It feels like it's been bad for Sam Laporta, but also like Jameson, after that hot start with a bunch of targets, he had actually, and he'd scored a couple times, but he had settled into more of a 2-3-4 target sort of role. So we'll see which version of Williams we get.
Yeah, and I still think that's probably the best use for Jameson Williams, is like get him on efficient targets but low volume. But everybody's had lower volume from a raw volume perspective than expected in mm-hmm. this Detroit Lions offense, and especially in the passing game, mostly because they haven't really had to open it up against anybody. And obviously this version of the Houston Texans, if they don't have Nico Collins, then I think, are they really going to have to open it up against the Houston Texans, or can they just put the ball in the running back's hands over and over and over again and kind of just grind them into a loss? I think that's totally possible. But yeah, if Nico's back out there, I mean, look, they're going to need him because this is a man-heavy defense in Detroit. They make you do the difficult stuff a lot, as we talked about previously on the show. Like, and it's fun. It's really fun to watch. I really enjoy watching mm-hmm. this defense. It's a lot of man coverage. They heat you up, even if they don't have Aiden Hutchins anymore. They just traded for Za'Darius Smith. I think that's going to help them a little bit. Aline McNeil's coming off a great game last week. So they're going to need a guy like Nico Collins who can actually get open against man coverage, because I don't think any of the guys out there right now. Tank Dell definitely starting to look a little bit better right around the time when he should be starting to look a little bit better. But guys like John Mechie, Xavier Hutchinson, this version of Robert Woods, they're not beating the Lions corners in man coverage, period, end of story. So they need Nico Collins back out there for this to be a competitive back and forth game.
Yeah, the other thing, the Lions are just so full of crazy stats on the season and crazy like efficiency stats. Jared Goff, I think I saw today, over his last 6 games, is completing like 82% of his throws. that's just stupid. Like nobody does that. That's unprecedented stuff. This thing is a machine, and it is absolutely humming.
Yeah, absolutely humming. And I think he had like 3.7 air yards per completion last week or something like that. I mean, on the season, 4.8 air yards per completion for Jared Goff, which is, you know, right around Daniel Jones, your boy Caleb Williams, Spencer Rattler. And this team is a powerhouse on offense, and he's averaging that many air yards per completion because, like I said, they just haven't really had to open it up. I wonder if they'll have to open it up in this game, because obviously the Lions can. We should have no question. Like, can the Lions offense open it up? Yeah, no kidding. For sure they can. So I'm hoping that that's what we get out of Houston, because, you know, Stroud's a guy that's our consensus quarterback 20 this year over at Yahoo for our rankings. I'm actually the lowest right now because I've just been skeptical about the Nico Collins, whether he's going to be back and things like that. But yeah, I mean, there's guys like Justin Herbert, Aaron Rodgers, Drake May, Russell Wilson, that like I might rather play over CJ Stroud this week if we don't get Nico back. If we get Nico back, obviously different discussion there.
Yeah, totally huge swing. I think he's unplayable without Nico, and that's not, I don't even mean that in a disrespectful way to Stroud. I think he's really good. I think he's having a fun season, but you know, we need at least you know, you could have made an argument for him with a healthy Steph Diggs, but we don't even have that. There's just only Tank Dell here. And we need Nico to balance this offense.
All right, Andy, hell of a show. Appreciate you, my friend. You will be back. We'll both be back on Sunday after the dust settles to recap week 10. In the meantime, I'm going to say goodbye to Andy. And on the other side of the break, we're going to be welcoming Tara Roberts. Just don't give him that wave. If people only the YouTube folks got to see that very weird wave from Andy Behrens. The audio folks will never get to see that. That was bizarre. Anyways, definitely let's take a break after that. I'm shook. On the other side of it, Tara Roberts is going to join me to share her make or break players for week number 10 right after this. Joining us now, as she always does here on the weekly preview show, it is Tara Roberts. Tara, what's going on?
I'm doing good. Week 9 was very beautiful for me, Matt. My double tight end propaganda hit with Kate Otten. Mike Gesicki had an excellent week. So I'm kind of thinking, like, for every bit that Andy talks about kickers, maybe I should rebrand to tight ends. So I'm kind of mulling that over. Feeling good.
Yeah, I mean, why not? There's always, I know it's like you and Neil Dutton, basically, competing for the fantasy's tight end corner. So, I mean, listen, shout out to Neil. Great dude. Listens to the pod. So, again, shout out to Neil. But, I mean, he's not on the show, Tara. You are. So, we could use people breaking down tight end. So, if you want to have that as your bit, I'm more than welcome to, or more than happy to cede the floor to you.
Let's do it.
All right. I love it. Well, hey, this first player we're going to break down in make or break players. And listen, if you've listened to the show, you know the deal. Make or break players, not a strict starts it. But, you know, underlying situations with some of these players we can break into and maybe decide if they are going to make or break your lineup for every single week. Here in week number 10, first player we're breaking down is not a tight end, although Tara did catch a pass. Did catch a touchdown sure. pass. We kind of went up and got it. Yeah, did a little bit of tight end stuff. He's a player who Drew Brees compared to his former teammate live on air, who has tight end eligibility in fantasy football, and that is Denver Broncos quarterback Bo Nix. I know you also might want to loop in some Cortland Sutton to this one. So, what do we think about Bo Nix here, and maybe his teammate Cortland Sutton in Week 10?
Yeah, you know, matchup is the whole thing with a lot of these players this week. I feel like last week we were kind of playing off of injuries and getting creative. And this week we're just looking at these guys that we know exactly what they are. It's just a matter of whether or not they can succeed in potentially difficult matchups here. Bo Nix, I don't talk about quarterbacks often in the make or break because they are what they are. But I felt compelled to talk about Bo Nix this week just because as the season has progressed, I found myself becoming a little bit of a supporter for Bo Nix. Not a truther yet. I'm not at that level, but I've foregone my college bias towards him and have opened my mind that from a fantasy perspective, I like the direction this is heading. The rushing upside has been absolutely tremendous for him. Fifth most rushing attempts and yards among quarterbacks. Third most rushing touchdowns. We knew it was there. I just don't know if we knew how much it was going to be tapped into. And he's thriving. He's being evasive, not getting sacked a ton. It's working out very well. In terms of his fantasy performances, we've seen the lows, right? The first four games of the season were a little bit sketchy for him. But after that, after he got a little bit more acclimated here, the ceiling has been excellent. 30 fantasy points. The floor has been perfectly fine and acceptable. 14 fantasy points. He's had multiple top 10 finishes here. Starting to get a little bit more comfortable with him, moving him up in the rankings and feeling confident about it. But it just as we're kind of looking at him and feeling more confident, we get hit with this Kansas City matchup here, which is one of the worst passing matchups that you can have from the perspective of their overall defense is fantastic. But there might be a little bit of leeway in this matchup that makes him a potential streaming option because the way that you don't want to attack them, although they're very strong through the air, you don't want to attack them on the ground. And their run game has been all over the place. I know we've talked about Javonte Williams a ton. There's potential of Audric Estime popping up in this lineup. They just haven't the prospect of them being effective in the run game in this matchup, slim to none. Lower scoring matchup as well. So it leans me to believe that we're going to see a decent rushing upside from Bo Nix, decent passing stats as they try to make this a competitive game here with Kansas City, whose offense is gelling more after the addition of DeAndre Hopkins. So when we're looking at Bo Nix in this matchup, he might be potentially one of your better streaming options this week. I've seen a lot of start-sit questions with him, but it is very volatile. It is extremely, extremely risky here because we're literally depending on that rushing upside to be there to carry him in terms of that floor, because without it, it could get a little bit ugly.
Yeah, you really are counting on that rushing upside for sure. And it's different than last week because I think people were interested in Bo Nix last week because of the matchup with the Ravens defense, and they give up so much deep passing production. They're just vulnerable in the secondary generally, and it wasn't a good football day for Bo Nix and the Denver Broncos. That was really a non-competitive outing from the jump, but from a fantasy perspective, it turned out all right. This is a bit of a different discussion here because this Chiefs defense is really good, and that's part of the issue here. I also think it's interesting to consider sort of the other side of this equation here, Tara, where Baltimore, their offense is just, it's just, I'm not going to say it's unstoppable, but no matter what type of defense you have, they're going to put you in a bind. Like, okay, we don't have like a number one outside receiver necessarily. So who you covering Patrick Surtain with, you're not going to have him shadow Zay Flowers because he's moving around the formation and that whole thing. So they put defenses in a bind. And I'm not saying that Kansas City, obviously with Pat Mahomes, Andy Reid, the whole deal, they don't put teams in a bind, but this is a very different matchup for Kansas City's offense against Denver's defense than what they saw last week against Tampa Bay. I mean, they're on the other end of the man coverage spectrum. The Bucs barely play any man coverage. They play so much zone, and DeAndre Hopkins in this role is just, he's going to tear up your zone coverage moving across the field from slot to X receiver, the whole deal. This is different, and I think that's important to consider here because I think we want Bo Nix in – I don't really know, Tara. Do we want him in a negative game script where he's just running around and doing all the things? Or do we want him in more of a neutral, I don't think positive just because of where these two teams are, but like a neutral game script here in a competitive outing? Like, I don't really have a good bearing on what we want out of Bo Nix in that way.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. We looked last week, the negative game script, you would have thought that there would have been a little bit more pass volume. There wasn't. It wasn't as if he was out there just straight chucking it. So I think a neutral game script does make a lot more sense here and probably benefits Courtland Sutton as well. Because when you look at him in that offense and, you know, things were a little bit shaky in terms of his targets and catchable balls as well. But over the past couple of weeks, they've gotten on track, yes, in better matchups, but at the same time, it seems like they've really decided to stop playing around with shifting targets to other locations and said, hey, this is our guy right here. We're going to narrow the target share within this offense. And we're seeing high volume go to Courtland Sutton. So if that connection can remain the strongest connection between the two players on the team, at the same time, get a game where this is low scoring but competitive. It doesn't feel like we're getting a panicked Bo Nix trying to chase points and figure out or play hero ball or something like that. It does make a lot more sense for both of them. So I agree with you. We want to see a more competitive game to where they're not having to figure out what to do with Bo Nix and whether or not they're just pushing high pass volume and they can have a more balanced attack there.
It is just funny looking at the Denver Broncos target distribution just in the last two games, even just playing time distribution. Courtland Sutton's run around on 84% of the dropbacks. Nobody else is higher than 50. He has a 29.6% target share. Nobody else is higher than 16. The number two receiver has gone from being Troy Franklin for a minute. Now it's like little Jordan Humphrey. It was Josh. Like, it's all over the place, but Courtland Sutton is obviously the one constant. So speaking of one receiver that I can't really get my head around, which is kind of how I feel about Courtland Sutton, I definitely feel that way about Calvin Ridley, who is famously still in the coping corner after a couple of good games without DeAndre Hopkins. How much are you willing to buy into what we've seen out of Calvin Ridley from a deployment and a results perspective the last 2 weeks?
I can't deny that Mason Rudolph has, you know, put a little bit more pep back into the step of this Titans offense there. You know, despite this being a very interesting fantasy situation. Calum Ridley's recent performances have been a little bit more reliable in terms of volume, right? We're finally seeing targets be more consistent for him. And granted, this is an extremely small sample size here, but 15 receptions on 23 targets over 200 yards over the past two games. But there's still kind of that glaring issue of the fact that he's not getting those touchdown opportunities. It's just not happening in this offense, and I don't feel like that's going to change. And so when you're looking at Calvin Ridley and who he is as a player, we need him to have those touchdown opportunities to actually offer upside. And do we want to rely on Mason Rudolph to be supplying volume to him? It makes things a little bit sketchy. And then you throw in this bad matchup with the Chargers where, you know, their defense, we were a little bit, you know, unsure earlier in the season, but it's become very clear. They've been very strong against the pass. High volume quarterback situations are just not happening against them. And they've done so against decent quarterbacks as well. So the odds of Rudolph reaching enough volume to continue this supply of aggressive volume for Calvin Ridley and aggressive targets and yardage for him without the touchdowns. On top of that, I mean, is it going to be Rudolph? We've got the potential of Will Levis returning this week. It's just kind of a weird situation where I want to trust Calvin Ridley. We're finally seeing enough volume in him, and this target share is working out since the exit of DeAndre Hopkins. Him leaving does make sense that it would open up opportunities. At the same time, you just kind of wonder to what degree it's just a little bit of a fluke due to matchups of the last two games and what we'll really have in this matchup here with the Chargers and how much we can trust it. I don't trust it from a pass perspective, but at least when you look at the wide receivers recently against the Chargers, they've been getting enough volume. Yardage has been there. Receptions have been there. We recently had Chris Olave, of all people, with 8 receptions, over 100 yards. So I feel like it could still happen. I'm not trusting Mason Rudolph, but I am mildly trusting Calvin Ridley to be able to keep this little hot streak of his going here.
I love how hesitant you are with this entire Calvin Ridley analysis, and I'm less than hesitant. I kind of think Calvin Ridley's a sell high at this point. Not even like, because I think narrative wise, people are going to buy into the whole, yeah, he's DeAndre Hopkins is gone. Calvin Ridley is the guy they paid. Like he's going to be getting it done. But you brought up a couple of great points here. Number one, it's obviously the Will Levis specter sort of hanging up over all of this. I don't think Levis was really benched. I think Levis was, you know, he's not healthy, and I think they'll want to go back to him at some point. And I don't think Levis is the guy. I think they know Levis is not the guy, but at some point I do think they'll maybe just want to get one more look at him. So there's that hanging over all of this. Also, you mentioned the touchdown opportunities. Despite Calvin Ridley dominating the team in targets, 35% targets over the last 2 weeks, 31% targets per route run, he's only got one end zone targets to three from Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, man, he is just like, he's Darius Slayton southeast here, or a little more southwest, obviously, because Tennessee, just the guy that never really goes away. He's always in this receiver room no matter who else is on the coaching staff, whatever, and he's like a useful player for them, I guess, because again, three end zone targets the last 2 weeks, two receiving touchdowns, none for Calvin Ridley. So I think that makes sense, though. That kind of tracks. Ridley's not that type of guy. He's also not a yards after catch player either. You're going to have extreme volume for Ridley to get home. And with the matchup against the Chargers this week, which is a defense I've grown to really, really respect, Minnesota next week, Houston the week after that, a little bit of a tough stretch here for the Tennessee Titans offense and specifically this passing game. So, I think if you have Ridley, maybe you throw him out this week, but if he has even any more usable like performance in this particular game, I might try to get out of it after this one.
Yeah, I agree. I've got Ridley on a couple of rosters and you hesitate, right? You're like, can I find a better matchup? Can I find something a little bit safer? Because it's a matter of it's not even a make or break, is it? Well, it's as much as it's just a massive boom bust, terrible floor situation there where, I mean, even with, we kind of saw it with Cortland Sutton as well. There's these high upside receivers that can literally get you zero fantasy points. And that's a little frightening.
That is an uncomfortable feeling, that is for sure. Well, Rico Dowdle, next player we're going to talk about here. Isn't this just so classic fantasy tarot? Right as it's kind of happening for Rico Dowdle taking over this backfield, now we're faced with, I mean, questions about every other position potentially here in Dallas. So what do we think about Rico Dowdle potentially being the running back one, but for an offense that might be starting Cooper Rush for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I feel bad for him, to be honest. Again, this was, you know, a tough start to the season and trying to figure out everything with Ezekiel Elliott. Pushed him to the side, became the clear back, suffered an injury, got sick. I mean, it's just been, you know, bye week, and now all of a sudden we feel comfortable with him. Like, I know this is the RB1. I know that Zeke is not a threat. I know Dalvin Cook is not a threat. Volume will be there, but what kind of volume, what kind of productivity can he have off of this volume with Cooper Rush at quarterback here? The only thing that I will say here is that his role within the receiving game has grown, and I'm feeling a little bit more confident in the amount of volume that he's been receiving through the air. So let's say we get into a scenario where Dallas is obviously struggling, they're chasing points, there's not a game script situation is the good thing. Because I know last year, for the little bit of sample size that we got of Rico Dowdle, we were looking at him as more of a, you know, he's not a guy that was going to be in on third downs. He's not a receiving threat, and it seems like he's really developed and earned that trust within the Cowboys offense. And that's fantastic. At the same time, do we trust that Cooper Rush is that guy that is going to be checking down a lot? We got a very tiny sample size, but it doesn't appear that way. So I feel like check downs can save him. He's got a decent floor here. I'm not super panicked about him if I had any level of confidence that that receiving volume would continue. So him is the player. Him is his role within the offense. Perfect. I've got no problem with that. It's just what you said. We have no idea what is going to happen with this change in quarterback situation and what this offense is going to have to transition to.
It's he's in perfect range in our weekly rankings. He's running back 28 in our weekly rankings consensus wise over at Yahoo, which is so perfect because it's just like, all right, you got a better option? Throw him out there. But he's right on that borderline of what I would say is an acceptable starter, because I think after that, the guys that are starting after him, or excuse me, that are ranked after him, Tank Bigsby, Raheem Mostert, Javonte Williams, Tyler Algier, Austin Eckler with, you know, Brian Robinson probably back in this game. I think that's what the rankings assume. Obviously, that would change if Robinson misses time. But those guys, like, typically, if you're starting them, your fantasy team is kind of banged. Your fantasy team's not in a very good spot. But I feel like you can still say, all right, I'm doing okay. If I'm starting Rico Dowdle, if I have Rico Dowdle starting as my running back two or my flex or something like that, I'm okay. I like the way that you, not great, but okay. But I like the way that you break down about the passing game part of this for Dowdle. And, you know, Sal pointed out earlier this week that Rico Dowdle actually was in the 2-minute drill ahead of Hunter Lepke, the fullback who was kind of operating as that player. That's a good development for Rico. The other thing that does scare me, though, and we haven't talked about this, I would say that the Eagles defense went from a unit that I was really skeptical of to start the year to a unit now that I have a lot of respect for, because they have players breaking out really at all three levels. Young guys, you know, Jalen Carter looks like he's taking another step. N'Kobe Dean's had a couple of nice moments lately. Cooper DeJean and Quinyon Mitchell, the rookies in the back end, look like hits. Especially, I'll talk about them when we get to the next player here, actually, because they played last week. But those guys all look good. So that could also limit sort of the ceiling of a running back for a Cowboys offense that is, again, probably going to be trailing points in this game.
Yeah, I've got the exact same mindset on that one. It's not a good situation that he's running into. I flipped in terms of the way that I look at that Philadelphia defense as well. And I feel like we kind of knew that heading in to the season, that it was a young team that had to develop. So it's just hitting at a very tough spot for him.
All right. So I mentioned that other player, which is Brian Thomas Jr., which is a great way to wrap up make or break here, because Tara, I don't know if you had Brian Thomas is kind of on this list anyways before the news about Trevor Lawrence, but certainly now that Trevor Lawrence not likely to play this week, maybe not for a while. Yeah, Brian Thomas seems like a screaming make or break player. So Tara, I know we're going to get a ton of questions about Brian Thomas leading up to Sunday. Oh, yeah. What do we do with this guy, especially because he's not coming off one of his big games? So what is your advice to people about Brian Thomas, and how are you viewing this situation now going into week 10?
Yeah, he was on the list before the news. My position on it slightly shifted after the news.
Really? Not a Mac Jones believer.
You know, I will say this. We've never seen Mac Jones with this caliber of wide receiver. So perhaps, you know, maybe he can, you know, yeah, maybe he can tap into like his Alabama days where he was out there throwing to, you know, I don't know. It's possible, but I'm not. I don't. Do I want to believe in Mac Jones? No. So I'm not. And it sucks because I've got a lot of Brian Thomas and you just feel so uncomfortable right now. And like you were saying, I can make an excuse for him last week because that Philadelphia defense, you know, 2 receptions, 4 targets, 22 yards. I mean, that was a terrible, terrible output there. But it's very clear that the Eagles defense is coming into their own and kind of on a hot streak and flipping right here, particularly in their pass defense from what we had seen earlier where it was a lighted up matchup. But looking at Brian Thomas, there's just a very, very clear pattern here. And I can see the vision. I know the goal of what I want for him. I just don't know if it can happen in this Jacksonville offense right now, especially if Trevor Lawrence is going to be out for extended time. And we know for sure this week. So when we're looking at Brian Thomas and, you know, the way that he's been thriving off touchdowns. There's not a ton of volume here. It's not receptions. He is a talented big play guy and the touchdown comes and it's, you know, great. Strong week for him. I feel good about him in my flex spot because that's where we're putting him. You know, we're not rolling him out there with confidence as a, you know, wide receiver two, wide receiver one. We're putting him into our flex spot and we're saying, I think this is a guy who has a decent matchup here and the ability to get a touchdown and pull through. And that's what he's been doing. But when those touchdowns don't come, good Lord, the floor is low because the volume just isn't there for him. So looking at him this week, and it's kind of weird because this Minnesota defense is kind of trending in the opposite direction of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And they had a nice strong bounce back week last week, but at the same time I don't know how much I buy into that. I think it just at this point teams have enough tape on that defense and a good, you know, a good coaching staff can figure out how to exploit it. Now, is this the coaching staff that can figure out how to exploit it? That I don't know. That puts another wrinkle of lack of trust in Brian Thomas this week as well. Vision-wise, there should be an increase in opportunity, you would think. Christian Kirk going down as well. Gabe Davis not really existing. You would just think that there would be the ability to kind of game plan and scheme to get some more volume to Brian Thomas, but it's not happening. We can't live off of those 4 or 5 targets, unfortunately. So, yeah, the Trevor Lawrence news just kind of pushed it in the direction of not feeling super confident about this one. The path to volume exists, but I just don't know if Doug Peterson has it in him.
Yeah, I mean, you said the quiet part out loud right there, which is a coaching staff. Like a good coach staff, good quarterback can probably find the areas to pick in this Minnesota defense at this stage, even though earlier in the year, you know, they were putting good quarterbacks like Brock Purdy with good coaches into stuffing them into a locker. I just have a lot of questions about Doug Peterson and this crew, this specific scheme, being able to pick nits in a defense, because that's not really what they do. They kind of just line up and play, and they have their, you know, Brian Thomas is the guy that's been a little bit role amorphous here. He's the guy that moves around the formation. He doesn't just stick at one spot at X receiver. He can play multiple positions. But even still, you're right to point out the volume, 18.1% target share since week 5. He does get he gets the end zone targets. And he makes big plays, a lot of yards after catch opportunities there for him. But you are relying on those big plays and you are relying on those touchdowns. How many touchdown opportunities and how many big play opportunities are we going to get against a Vikings defense that, you know, yeah, they've given up production, but overall still a good unit that's tough to face. And it's the Doug Peterson, Press Taylor brain trust with Mac Jones at the controls. I don't know, Tara. A lot of things I'm saying there sound a lot more break than make.
Yeah, it's not McVay and Stafford attacking here that is gonna that you can pull through. Yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's just a lack of trust in this Jacksonville team that is unfortunately pulling Brian Thomas down. In another scenario, we're saying, okay, he's a talent that can pull through in a difficult matchup here. But when you're surrounded by this coaching staff and this quarterback situation, unfortunately, no. I hope he can pull through, but it's so, so risky this week.
Yeah, we'll see what Mac Jones can offer us and see if he can channel his 2021 rookie season with the New England Patriots and just keep the train on the tracks for this Jaguars offense, and specifically Brian Thomas, because I'd like to see him grow more. You know, I was saying earlier in the show, I think we got just a little bit over our skis with Brian Thomas's start this year. Like, is he a true number one receiver yet? I think we're still kind of in the discovery phase of that, but he should be in the growth phase, and you're just not going to grow a lot like in this soil. Not a lot of good, not a good place to grow your roots in this particular soil that we got going on in Jacksonville right now. But that's enough negativity. Let's wrap the show with a little positivity here, and let's toss it to our keys to winning, presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And of course, as it always is, our keys to winning this week here in week 10 is to pick a couple of players that are going to just be fantastic in your flex spot this week. Don't make or break. Forget it. No. These guys are going to be great for you. These are the keys to winning this week. I will say, Tara, before I toss it to you, I love both of our selections this week. These are a couple of route runners, a couple of separators we're going to be talking about today. So I feel right at home discussing these two players. You give me your first key to winning player this week.
It's time to fire up your Khalil Shakir. If you've been hesitant and not been rolling him out, now is the time. The Buffalo receiving core has been very intriguing since the arrival of Amari Cooper. In his first game with limited snaps, Cooper had a solid outing, but so did Coleman and Khalil Shakir, giving you a sense that everything was just kind of coming together. Maybe Amari Cooper was just that little missing piece. Even the following game when he got hurt, we still continued to see strong usage of the other players as well. Shakir has been very steady. Despite his very solid involvement in the offense, fantasy managers, it feels like they're just kind of hesitant to view him as a must start. But now is the time. We've got Coleman and Cooper both dealing with injuries. Shakir should be the clear wide receiver one in an excellent matchup against a struggling Indianapolis defense. Here, we've got Shakir with the most reliable hands in the league. This could be the perfect alignment for him to finally achieve that true wide receiver one upside that you know is just kind of tapped somewhere in there. I like it.
Oh, I know it. I feel it in my bones that upside is there, and I'm very excited to see it. I'll pick another slot receiver, definitely a route running type of player here for my key to winning player, and that is Chargers wide receiver Ladd McConkey. I know Josh Palmer, Quentin Johnson, those guys got in the end zone last week, but make no mistake, Ladd McConkey is still the top receiver on this team. The volume data, routes run, target tree, all of that points to that way. And the film really asserts it as a fact, I think, with Ladd McConkey, how he's looked. And he still had a pretty decent day, had a play called back due to penalty, but still cleared 60 yards, had five catches, like I said, on a team high target share. The Chargers have really, they've continued their pass heavy ways in recent weeks. Since returning from their week 5 bye, LA ranks second in neutral pass rate, a far cry from what a lot of people feared this offense was going to look like coming into the season. And Justin Herbert, in that same span, has registered 18 deep attempts, a top mark among quarterbacks. So I love the way the offense is functioning. I love the way Ladd McConkey is being deployed. And I love the way Justin Herbert's playing. There's a lot of love for me for the LA Chargers right now. And yeah, it seems like an on-paper tough matchup with this Titans defense. But if you really dig into some of the data, teams have been much more willing to pass on them than they've been to run on them. And I think that's the way the Chargers will approach this one, especially with the slot receiver matchup and Ladd McConkey probably not going to get a lot of tough coverage from the outside cornerback. So Ladd McConkey, definitely a key to winning player this week, along with Khalil Shakir. Absolutely love these two separators here for this particular segment. And that, Tara Roberts, is going to do it. Hell of a show. Appreciate you. Man, I feel bad for what we said. I mean, I think it needed to be said, but I feel bad about what we said about Brian Thomas. And I'm hoping we're wrong. I mean, you're not often wrong in these segments. You crushed it with the double tight end stuff last week. I'm rooting against you here just for our, I mean, I think you might be rooting against yourself here.
Rooting against myself. I want to be wrong on this one.
And we want to see good things for Brian Thomas. All right. Like I said, Tara, that's going to do it. Tell the people what they can check out from you the rest of the week here on Yahoo.
As always, go make sure to check out my Make or Break article, break down more of this and these players. And of course, as well, join us on Fantasy Football Live on Sunday morning.
That's right. Be there or else we will take it personally. So hope to see you all on Sunday morning for Fantasy Football Live. And in the meantime, that's going to do it for today's show. Thanks again to Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. Next time you hear from us, it's going to be me and Andy Behrens breaking down Week 10 Sunday. What a great slate of games it is. Can't wait to get into all of that. Then Until then, we are out.